Staying Alive UK. Share your story.
Hello and welcome to the Share Your Story podcast series, a business biography, their story so far. My name is Michael De Groot and I am Chief Storyteller at Staying Alive UK. My purpose through this podcast series is to allow my guests, through their stories, inspire you to take the first step towards your new business venture, or maybe if you are already in business, develop your existing business even further. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you have a massive choice in which podcasts you listen to. And today I'm delighted to have on the podcast Joy Langley. And as always, before you hear from Joy, let me give you a quick introduction. Joy Langley is a counsellor, life coach, and cognitive behavioural therapist, and an accredited member of the British Association of Counselling and Psychotherapy in the UK. She has helped individuals understand and challenge their unique emotional glitches for over a decade, reigniting their desire for greater success in personal and business relationships, confidence, courage, and action man ability, happiness, and inner peace. Joy began her therapy career in the public sector in 2005, assisting college teenagers and young adults through emotional, tense, academic, and personal issues. Joy says a personal problem is distressing whatever life stage you are at. This is the main reason I focus on using easy-to-understand language and tools with a dose of humour to help psychological ideas stick. Welcome to the Share Your Story podcast, Joy. How are you today?
I'm doing great, thank you, Michael. Yes, I'm always in a great place, and I think having the name Joy certainly helps.
Oh, yes. And my grandmother was called Joy, actually. So you're right, being Joy and joyful, that does help, and you have to live up to that name, don't you?
It can be quite a pressure,
I bet.
Yes.
And do people ever take... You know, do they always say, well, Joy, are you joyful today? Or Joy, that's not very joyful.
Well, I don't think I get that as much as I used to, but I do have two names that I use, Michael. So my first name is Karen.
Yeah.
And my middle name is Joy, but they've been used at various stages throughout my life. So, you know, Joy is very normal for me. But I've had moments in my life when I've been depressed and I really hated the fact I had the name Joy. I thought it just didn't, it felt like a cruel joke that had been played on me by the gods.
And do you call yourself Karen in those days?
Yes, because it's one of those things where I've got two names. My family name, they've always called me Joy, and Karen has been a more formal name for school, etc., etc., because it's the first thing on my birth certificate. But, you know, so it's a bit, I just grew up thinking it was okay, but everybody else around me gets very confused.
Yeah, and you're right, because it is a bit confusing. What actually is your preference?
Joy, please.
Joy, yeah, yes. Okay. So I'm going to call you Joy for this podcast.
Definitely.
So my first question with everybody always is for you to share a little bit about your personal life. So, for example, where you were born, a bit about your education, where you now live, maybe a bit about your family if you wish to, any hobbies and interests, just so that our listeners get a perspective of Joy and her personal self.
Wow. Okay. Yep.
Thank you.
I can do that. Yeah. I was born in London. So it's a small place in London called Ealing. For those of you not in the UK, you'll know that London is fine. So I was born in London, and I grew up in the same place all of my life, lived in more or less the same house most of my life. My parents are still there, so that's the family home.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've got two brothers and two sisters, so I'm sort of the middle child. So I don't know if that, you know, as a therapist and all that kind of psychology stuff, there are lots of theories around middle children, first children,
really?
Last children, yeah, and how it shapes our personalities and the way that we are as human beings. All to do with having your needs met or not met, or expectations being put on you. You know, as an elder child, there are an awful lot of expectations, but I was a middle child, so I was reasonably carefree, I think, which was good news.
And so, I'm going to interject there, because That's fascinating, because you will have had examples of what your older siblings did and didn't do. So they were kind of, you know, ahead of you. You're kind of learning from them, oh, well, I certainly must not do that when I grow up. And then you had younger ones come along as well that you perhaps could influence. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds good. And it gets a little bit more complicated, Michael, because my elder sister didn't. It's a kind of a thing that happened with people from Jamaica. So my parents are Jamaican, and they had a daughter which they kind of left behind with a view to bring her over here when she was older. So she came over to the UK when she was older. So I've got a brother, an older brother, who's only 1 year difference between us. So I think I might have an older child, middle child complex thing going on, because I always felt I was in charge of things. I suppose he thought he was in charge of things, but I thought I was in charge of things. So it didn't, and you know, I do remember a lot of us sort of like kind of a battle for who's in charge, you know. So that was the elder side of it. The lower side of it, I've got a younger brother and a younger sister. So you're right, in that respect, I was, you know, top dog, I suppose. And they kind of hopefully did what I said. I wanted them to fetch me a drink, they would. I wanted them to get my slippers, they would. Until they got to an age when they told me where to politely go.
Okay, so I interrupted you there. You were in full flow about London and Ealing and the siblings. Then let's move to education.
Yes, education. Well, I think I got a good standard of education, Michael. I ended up doing a degree in chemistry and business, which is...
Wow.
Pretty weird, really, isn't it? You know, considering I didn't actually like chemistry. I just didn't know why. I don't know why I chose it. But it's one of those things where you're at school and I've never known what I've wanted to do. You know, you grow up, you keep grow up, and aunties and uncles and friends, they'll say, oh, what do you want to do when you grow up? And you just never know. I just never knew. So I thought that perhaps everyone knows best. So teachers thought, okay, Joy, you've done very well at chemistry, done very well at economics. So perhaps, you know, look at something that you can do as a degree. So that's why I ended up doing chemistry and business.
Oh, these teachers, they're the worst, aren't they?
I don't know if it's the teacher's fault. I have to take some responsibility.
Yes,
or, you know, but you're quite right. When we're that age, we're very susceptible to being told what to do. And we do really think that people have our best interests at heart.
Of course.
So, yeah, there's a combination of me not knowing what I wanted to do and then people who felt they knew what was best. So it's kind of a collision of things, isn't it?
Definitely, yes. Definitely. Okay. And then, so once you had the degree, what happened next?
Well, the big plan was to go out in the world and conquer the world and be, you know, some top CEO or whatever of a company. But that never worked out, Michael. It didn't quite work out that way. When I got my degree, I found it really hard to get jobs. And I ended up, and it was, I think it was during the time when it was the late, oh, you work out my age now, but it was the mid-80s. So, it was a bad time economically and there were jobs went there. So I ended up retraining and I did some secretarial work. So I did shorthand typing, all that kind of stuff, and got jobs in various companies thereafter around that sort of level. Hope thinking that you'd be able to progress your way up the chain, but it didn't quite work out that way. So I was a very jaded young lady who really felt the world owed her something and it hadn't happened. And with all those awful, you know, thinking styles going on, I got very depressed. I got very depressed because I really didn't end up doing what I thought I'd be doing. And I was annoyed and angry. And other words which I can't say on the radio. Yeah. It wasn't good. So that was the job front. Lots of that kind of PA secretarial stuff. And I learned loads, fair enough. I've learned how to be organized. So in a way, I always say things you do in life have a way of combining, like baking a good cake, Michael, and So the organisation stuff that I did back then, it's perfect for business. So running my own business, I really do understand about filing things, you know, storing things, putting things away, even managing my time to a certain degree, and that can be difficult. But that's just kind of second nature to me. So it's been very helpful. Totally. At the time, I didn't like it, Michael. It was just something to do.
Yes.
Something to pass the time and get paid, you know.
Yes, sure. And how long did you do it for in the end?
I did that for a good 10 years, I think it was. Mm. It was, yeah, a good, almost 10 years, I'm sure it was. But my last job was in a music company. So, and that was brilliant. That was really where I realised that I liked music.
Mm.
And my partner at the time was doing music. My sister was doing music. They were working together, you know, two musicians. And we decided to run our own company, which was nice. So I ended up leaving, or being made redundant, should I say.
Mm.
I see the redundancy as a bit of a blessing in disguise.
Yes.
Because I wanted to go.
Of course, yeah.
And back then, gave you such big payouts.
Yes.
For redundancy. You could actually live off it for almost like, you know, 7-8 months. You
Yeah, you know,
it was good stuff, wasn't it, really? It doesn't happen nowadays. You're going to be almost be out on your ear after about 3 weeks if you've only got 3 weeks of money to live on. So it's really bad. But it was good back then. And we became a record label, first of all. And then we became more PR and publicity. Based.
Okay, and what? And a record label for who?
For ourselves. It was the era when you used a DIY job, you know? So in the same way that I suppose younger people are now putting their stuff out on YouTube, etc. Back then, with British music, and we were creating soul music, not really rap music or reggae, but soul music. It was just an American scene, so very, very, very much dominated by the Americans, and the Brits didn't get a look in. Yet there were lots of British artists floating around who were just amazing. So it was an exciting time, and it was the era of what they call the white labels.
Yes.
So you were able to make your LP on your vinyl thing, and you're able to go around the shops yourself, and they'd stock it and they'd sell it. And it was great. It was just very, very exciting times.
And did you play music then?
No, I'm rubbish. Can't sing, can't play anything. I'm pretty useless. I ended up doing some backing work with a backing singer with my sister, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because we go out and do some gigs around the nightclub. So, and she wanted someone to dance with her, you know, coordinate with. So I do that. But obviously I wasn't singing. It's all, you know, like, you know, miming, isn't it?
Yes.
So I could get away with it, couldn't I?
Yeah. And so you were what, managing the business for
yes.
your
yes. In right. the end I ended up managing it and doing the all the PR bits, so writing the press releases, contacting people, exactly, and going around the shops and collecting the money when there was money to be collected, which there was sometimes.
You know,
so we did a lot of that.
Yeah, we have a tiny, tiny bit in common, because when I came to the UK, I was working in London. I was commuting into London. My passion, my desire was always to play the drums.
Ooh.
And I learned to play the drums. And I was working in the textile industry. I always, always wanted to work in the music industry. I used to walk through Soho, where all the music companies were, not
exactly.
for the other reason, but for the music companies.
They were all in a place called, it was called Tin Pan Alley in the olden days, but I can't remember the proper name of that road, where all the publishers were, a lot of the record shops were.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they were there. And I was always looking at these buildings, and you couldn't see anybody. It was all kind of glass and everything. I said, oh, I really want to work for these companies, but I never, ever did. Because I didn't have the skills, you know. I was always looking at the job adverts, and I never had the right qualifications to go into that side of the business, because I loved music and I loved, you know, playing the drums, which I only did for a short while. But
yeah,
fascinating. So I'm a little bit jealous that you were in the music industry.
Well, it sounds as though you could have become a famous drummer, Michael.
I could have been. Yeah, I could have been.
But the music industry is not all that it's cut out to be. In the end, it's just an industry, and you happen to just be selling music.
Yeah.
Working for the big record label, I think it was A&M Records and Polydor and Polygram, all those that group of company. That's who I worked for.
Yeah,
that's interesting because people are just very laid back, but they still got a job to do. They still got to do the promotional stuff. Still got to do the marketing.
Yes,
and occasionally, of course, artists would come in. I don't think I ever saw anyone famous. So.
No.
But we got free tickets to concerts. Now, I keep forgetting how wonderful that part was.
Yes.
So Michael Jackson at the time and INXS, I think they were out at the time.
Yes.
All these people we just got to see. Janet Jackson, funnily enough, as well.
Oh, wow.
So we just took it for granted that we got these free tickets. And sometimes we didn't go to the concerts. It was terrible, wasn't it? We had these free tickets and you just didn't go. Or you go to a concert and leave early because you didn't value the fact that you haven't paid for it.
Yeah.
So it was interesting, that was. I've forgotten that part.
Okay, and then what happened? How long were you guys doing this for?
We did that for about 8 years, it felt like. It was quite a long time. Because,
that is long, yeah.
Yeah, from we stopped producing music and then branched out into a newsletter for musicians, so for fellow musicians around us who were not getting publicity. We started out with a basic, you know, A4 sheet back, you know, front to back, talking about our group, and then talking about some friends as well. Mailed that out to the record companies, also mailed it out to the shops and the newspapers and mags. So it was a bit of a PR stuff, but it was a way of publicising initially what we did. But in the end, it was kind of safety in numbers. So the more people that we said were marvellous, all these British artists coming through, doing amazing things, it kind of created its own bit of hype.
Yes.
So it really worked well. And then that branched into an A3 sheet of paper, so folded in half like a booklet.
Yes.
So it grew into that. And then we were interviewing artists to fill that up. We were putting adverts in there, again, to cover the cost of printing. Mm-hmm. We were going out and interviewing some of the artists for record labels. So I interviewed this guy called Shaggy, this reggae guy, and mm-hmm. then I interviewed Beyonce, funnily enough, but she was part of a group at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She was part of that four girl group.
Yes.
The name's gone from my head.
I know them. I can see them.
Don't even go there. Yeah. Anyway, she was part of, that's when she came over.
Yeah.
Very young. We were wearing our jumpers, doing our, you know, like, we just look right. Ordinary interview with this group, so that was good fun. Obviously she went on to do really, really well, but I didn't realize it at the time. We were just interviewing people. Yeah, exactly. But you never know where people are going to go.
No.
So it's just as interesting. But there's lots of things I think that perhaps I've done in my past which I've kind of forgotten how good it was.
Yeah. Oh wow. It's so fascinating to, you know, to have gone down this journey and you just don't know where it's going to take you. And, you know, and you realize now, I guess you're getting a sense of looking back and saying how great it was.
Yes. And
at the time, often we feel like when we're in the middle of it and we're stressed out and having to get the job done, we forget. You know, we kind of go, oh, God, it's stressful, perhaps, and we've got to do this work and it's repetitive, maybe. But actually, when we look back out on what we did, we went, actually, it was all right.
Yes, I think life is interesting, or at least our memories. We're very, very good at editing things.
Yes.
Like a good film director. You know, hopefully we cut out all the bad bits and we remember only the good bits.
Mm.
But later on, I obviously, as you know, Michael went on to become a therapist, but we'll get around to that. So
yes.
We're just thinking about the way that the mind edits things. It does try to remember the good things, but it's also very good at remembering the bad things.
Yeah.
So, but I like the fact that now that I'm talking to you, it's almost like, you know, my little admin people have gone scurrying off into my memory banks and they're pulling out bits of information. I'm going like, oh, I haven't seen that for a long time. Oh, you know, it's a trip down memory lane, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay. So what happened after that?
Yes, well, after I finished with the music business, which was, as I said, my mid, I think it might be mid-30s, I ended up retraining in therapy. Mm. So I became a counsellor, studied for 4 years. Then I worked in a college. So I was the counsellor for the students. So
and
16
why?
To... Say that again, please.
Why?
Why?
Yeah, why did you retrain into that from the music business?
Oh, I don't know. It wasn't just there. I was in a place where after interviewing all those artists, not that they drove me around the bend or anything, I just realised I liked talking to people.
Right.
Surprise, surprise, Michael.
Yes.
Of course, counselling is not so much about talking. It's a lot to do with listening.
Yes.
But I found... people's life stories fascinating.
Yes.
And I think when you work in the field, professional field of therapy and counselling and life coaching, you do need to be curious, really curious about people's lives, you know. So that part of it got sewn up. And then I was also splitting up with an ex-partner at the time. So perhaps I thought it was a way of getting some personal therapy for me as well, which I think it probably helped.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of two things, you know, realizing that I had a passion for being nosy. Let's be honest, Michael.
Yes.
Let's not dress it up. You know, being nosy, talking to people, and then also personal development became something that came back onto the map.
Mm.
Because I'd actually been looking at personal development in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, you know, I got really jaded with life and got depressed is what happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just needed to find some answers, you know, what's the meaning of life,
yes.
all that kind of stuff,
yeah.
how to get out of that kind of vicious loop that you can get into and not knowing how to fix it.
No.
So I think... back then, I was very excited about all the books I was reading. I thought, oh, everybody should know about these books. Everybody should
yes.
be reading these things. I do remember thinking that. So
yeah.
When ironically I went back into therapy later on and became a therapist, it was like, yeah, now I really can tell people about these things. Now I really can help people.
Mm.
So in a way, perhaps my path, although I could not see the wood for the trees, Michael, there was probably a clear pathway through there.
Yes. Wow. And so did you combine the studying and then helping people as together, or did you do all your studying first and then start helping people?
What you normally do is you train, and sometimes you have the opportunity to work with clients while you're training. So
yes.
they do insist that you do that, and that makes a lot of sense. So we had clients outside of the course. That was probably in the final year. But, you know, it's to do with, I suppose, making sure that you're competent.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is above board and not going to harm anyone. So we could never call ourselves therapists until we left. We were always students, or we were just classified as helpers, you know,
yes.
whatever name you want to give it, because we were never therapists. But we started working with clients one-to-one in our final year. And they called it just a placement. So you'd try and work with, you know, a charity, perhaps, like a mind organization, if you can, or, you know, anywhere where people are receiving counseling and you can, you know, join them as a volunteer and gain what we call your hours. So you start working towards gaining a certain number of hours of competency.
Yeah. And then, so having done all of that and getting qualified as a counsellor, how did you then go about, you know, setting up your business or getting hired? Or did you go and work somewhere as a counsellor?
Yeah, that's interesting. When I qualified, you know, I realised that there aren't that many full-time, properly paid jobs as a counsellor.
Mm.
So that's a really daft time to find out that the whole thing that you've been studying for, there's actually no, I should swear here, jobs at the end of it, Michael.
Mm.
You know, it's like I just, and in a way, I suppose as time went on, you kind of realized that.
Yes.
But you don't want to think about it. And then your lecturers and your tutors are not clearly saying that there aren't any jobs. When we broached the subject, it was kind of fobbed off in a way.
Yes.
But when I came out, there were no jobs as such, and it would have been the route is volunteering, i.e. I spent lots of money on training, and I meant to go and just do things for free.
Yes.
And I just thought, I don't think so.
No.
I've got a roof to put over my head and a son to feed and everything else. So it's just not going to happen. So I was going to take a job in an estate agent.
Yay! Yay!
Bless all the estate agents in the world. And I almost did have this job because I'd been for the first interview and the second interview was coming up. And then I saw a job in my local newspaper. And by then I'd moved out of London. And I'd moved out to the countryside.
Yes.
I moved to Buckinghamshire.
Okay. So,
and it is very leafy out here, lots of trees and green stuff everywhere.
Gorgeous.
And I saw an advert in the local newspaper during this period when I was going to be applying or almost getting this job in the estate agents.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for, you know, counsellor wanted at the local college, blah, 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 blah.
Wow.
And I just looked and I thought, this is gold dust. You don't have... Jobs do not come up, especially ones that are paid.
Mm.
And it had a good salary. I thought, oh, this is just good. This is great. And I said, that's it. I said, that job has got my name on it.
Yes.
And I just kept, you know, all this positive stuff I'd been in, frame of mind I've been in, like, this job has got my name on it.
Yes.
And I kept telling myself over and over and over and over and over again. And I went for the interview and I was thinking it and I left thinking it. And then they rang me and said, you got the job. I went, oh, my, I can't believe it. I almost fell off my chair, Michael. From wanting it, telling myself, and then it happened. I just thought, I can't believe it. I was ecstatic. I think I probably jumped up and down a lot. And I remember thinking, what are you doing, woman? What are you doing? I'm saying, I'm excited.
Of
I'm
course.
Excited. I got the job. You know, and I really was excited.
It was your dream job, but you'd studied for it so long.
Absolutely. So, and they're hard to come by. So I did that. You know, it was brilliant. Worked with students for about, I worked there for 7 years, actually, Michael.
Yeah.
That was a long time.
Brilliant.
But it's actually really hard to leave a paid job of that sort,
sure,
given that the jobs are far and few between and the rest of the industry, the rest of my colleagues, I suppose, are volunteering, you know, and not being paid. So I held on to that job for as long as I could. And then towards the end, I was made redundant, which was okay, because I was getting a little bit bored of working there.
Yeah.
And I wasn't seeing as many students as I would have liked, and I was bored.
Yes.
So that was... And then I remembered the reason why I studied that as well. So yeah. I had two reasons at the beginning. One, that I think I might be good at talking, Michael. I don't know whether you think that or not.
I do. I agree. Yeah, I concur.
Exactly. And the second reason was it helped me through a hard time, through a personal breakup, which was good. And the third one was I needed a job, I think, I was thinking that a job that will see me into my old age.
Right.
And I can do any time, any place, anywhere.
Yes.
So it's not a job where I'm going to end up not being able to do it. Mm. This should be kind of a job for life, you know.
Mm.
And so the redundancy, when that kicked in, it just reminded me, okay, well, this is what the big plan was, Joy, remember? This was the big plan.
Yes.
And so the big plan started taking shape.
And when did you form the big plan?
When?
Yeah.
Well, the big plan happened when I first started the course, Michael. You're not paying attention, are
you? Okay. Okay. But you then went and got the job.
That's right.
Yeah. So it wasn't the case of, I'm going to find another job. I'm now going to do this for myself.
That's right. Exactly.
And okay, so that was the main kind of motivator turning point then that said, okay, now I've been made redundant. So now I've got to make this plan that I had started off with a reality.
Exactly. Exactly. Wow. Mike. This was crunch time, wasn't it?
And how did you then decide to set it up and find clients?
Yeah, well, I didn't know anything about how to do it. I didn't have a clue. I started, there were some couple of courses that I went on via my professional body. I kind of looked at what other people were doing, and I looked at information around setting up businesses. So obviously, perhaps also, again, having run the PR company,
yes,
you know, that, again, so the business acumen was there, I suppose, for me. So like I said, like making a very good cake. It's the joy cake. It actually had a lot of ingredients from my past and the skills which I had from the past, which were sort of coming together. So that was quite interesting, becoming a businesswoman, but I happened to be selling talk therapy.
Yes.
So, and I did learn as much as I could, again, refresh my mind about business, obviously looked at stuff to do with taxes and all that kind of, you know, stuff that you need to do to set your business up.
Yeah.
And then I just sat there and waited and waited. And I waited some more, Michael. Can you hear how silent it went?
Yes.
Yeah, my plan wasn't going to plan, was it?
No.
Yes. So I had to suddenly work out, how do you get clients? How am I going to get clients? Yeah. So there are a couple of directories that are on the internet. You type in counsellors, they come up and you can join them. And the clients go there and have a look. And it's like looking at a menu. So there'd be me on you there.
Yes.
Let's start again. There'd be me and there'd be you on this menu, including other therapists. And the client is obviously at liberty to choose who they want.
They'd
read the profile and choose somebody.
Mm.
So it really was hit and miss as to whether I got any work. And
did you?
Well, I did get some business. I don't think I remember being very rich. I went to the doctor's surgery and got some leaflets put in the doctor's surgery. But doctor's surgeries are a bit dodgy because they don't want to be seen to be advertising people who they haven't really vetted. And I quite agree with them, I suppose. But my doctor knew me and she said, no problem, Joy, you can put your leaflets in there. So I did that. And then it was learning all about marketing and, you know, and websites. Building websites, had to build my own website, Michael. That was horrendous. That was horrific. On WordPress, I just died so many times.
Oh, dear.
I think I kept the defibrillator, however you pronounce that thing. I had it quite close to hand.
Oh, wow.
Quite a few times. I just wept. It was frustrating. It was giving me a heart attack. It was doing all kinds of bad things to me. It was bad news. But, you know, running the business is about learning about every aspect of the business until you get to a stage that you can farm it out and get other people to do it for you. So that's the party line. And the real skill is making that happen. So you then have enough money to do to pay other people to do the things that you don't want to do.
Mm.
Which I'm getting there.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. Well done for taking on the challenge of creating your own website and using WordPress and having to use all of that. And yes, it is stressful, but you will have grown as a result of it, and you would have learned some things that you, I'm sure, are using today.
Absolutely, Michael. Yeah. I mean, this whole thing about, you know, how do we learn, and would I have preferred it to have been easy? Would I have preferred it to, you know, or everything to have landed in my lap? You know, the question is, the answer is, I'd like it to have been easy because I wouldn't have suffered. So I have to be honest with you. Yes, it would have been lovely. You know, where's that golden spoon when you need it? Obviously, I didn't. Oh, it's silver spoon. Is it born with a silver spoon in your mouth?
Who cares? Silver? It could be a copper spoon. It really doesn't matter.
copper spoon in your mouth. Well, I think it might be silver. So
yes.
I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. So therefore, life would be interesting in that respect.
Mm.
But it provides motivation. So to me, sometimes when things are easy, you can lose your motivation and your reason for doing something.
Mm.
And sometimes, you know, I call that my big, beautiful why. And I think that's come out of a recent guy who writes in that way. I think it's Simon Cynic, is it?
Some people say cynic, some people say cynic. Yeah, so him, I call him cynic.
Yeah, I was quite taken in by his thinking process. And the big, beautiful why has stayed with me for the longest amount of time, because it's true. If you don't know why you're doing something, it makes it really hard to progress to the next stage. Even if it's a tiny step, it makes it really hard to move on.
And that's a really great point, you know, because hopefully the people that are listening to this are people that are sitting on the fence deciding whether or not to get started with their own business, or it could also be business people that need to take their business to the next level. And asking that question why at every stage through your journey or the journey that you're on is a really good one. And I've done it. And yeah, I've been inspired by Simon Sinek as well, by asking that question as many times as you can, really, to inquire. It's that self-inquiry, really, you know, well, why am I doing this? Am I still enjoying it? Why should I change? Why should I be doing something on my own, perhaps? And once you clarify that, that gives you that impetus to move forward. So yeah, brilliant. Well done.
I agree with you 100% there. And if there are any listeners who are entering business or in business, you'll know that it's tough. Mm. It's tough being a sole trader. It's tough being self-employed. It's tough being a solo entrepreneur. All these lovely names they give to us, but basically we are the cook, the cleaner, and the bottle washer. We do everything, basically, don't we? give it a posh name, but basically you're on your own for the moment. And it's tough. It's tough working out how to manage your business. It's tough working out how to have the right product. And then the bigger part of it, I think, is the emotional toll that it takes, which is, you're meant to be chirpy and cheerful and positive. I know my name's Joy.
Joyful.
Exactly. But I tell you, what a strain having the name Joy and being in business. Because I tell you, it's not a walk in the park, is it, really?
No.
It's quite tough.
And we can't dress it up and go, you know, oh, it's all wonderful in the garden of running your own business. And at the same time, there are always highlights. It's like the phone call that you got the job, you know, I bet there are many highlights as well that you've had on your journey in being in business on your own. So let's balance it out, Joy. What are some of the highlights?
Do we have to balance it out, Michael? Okay, the highlights. My brain's going, were there any highlights? Can you find any? You can. My brain is actually going into like panic mode here, thinking, really? Were there any? Very interesting. Well, of course there were, Michael.
Yes.
Of course there were. I think sometimes the struggle is continuous, you know. So that's just, it's like a low level hum. I think that's what it is, one of those situations. But of course there are good points. So I know that when I went from having probably one client to two clients, I went, yay!
Yeah.
We're in business, Joy.
Yes.
That was a good feeling. That was a good feeling, Michael. And then when I went from probably 5 to 10 clients, hey, that was good too.
Yes.
So I sort of hover around, you know, 10 clients, really and truly. And but I charge a reasonable amount so I can get by, and I have a partner as well, and I have a son who has money, so we don't starve.
No,
I'm certainly not rolling in it.
No,
but I'm comfortable, and I see enough people in the week to, I suppose, make me happy, and to be doing what I love. And I've more recently balanced that out with a new project, which you're aware of, Michael. So my therapy organizational company is called Catch a Thought. So I did give that a lot of thought.
I bet.
I did really. I gave it loads of thought. I seriously did, because I thought, oh wow, in this world of, you know, problems, you know, and also solutions, and then everything, it's all about us and the quality of the thoughts that we have. So
yes.
I like this thing, the quality of the thoughts that we have, really, really critical. And it's always about paying attention to them and being a bit more aware of them. Mm. So hence the catching it, and basically having a look at it, checking it, and then doing something with it. Mm. So catch a thought is really, again, a reminder to myself that sometimes I need to slow down and look at what I'm thinking, and then I might be able to progress, you know, and you know, depending on whether it's a good thought or a bad thought, because the therapy stuff, I kind of keep it simple as well. Mm. You know, good thoughts generate good feelings. So, Michael, I'm sure you can reply. What do bad thoughts create then, Michael?
Bad feelings, Joy.
Oh, you have so got this one sewn up. Yep, absolutely got this one sewn up, Michael. Yes. So on a very simplistic level, that's what it's all about. So when I'm swimming in a space where I'm feeling really like miserable or whatever, I always say, okay, Joy, I talk to myself a lot. Mm. Okay, Joy, what were you thinking just before you had that bad feeling? Mm. And 10 times out of 10, Michael, I go, oh, right. Yeah. So you realize what the thought was that could have fueled the feeling.
Yes.
And then you have to work out whether, well, is that 100% true? So I'm very good at saying, well, Joy, is that statement that you just made then, is that 100% true? Mm. That you're never, ever, ever going to go on holiday again?
Mm.
That you're never, ever, ever going to fix your computer? You're never going to be able to do, you know, your website again? You know, there's lots of generalizations that we make in life.
Yes.
They're not very helpful. And it's called inflexible thinking and lots of exaggeration. Mm. So we're always exaggerating things and we're doing an awful lot of guessing. So we guess and it's always the Titanic, you know, sinking of the ship.
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful about your thinking style. And that's something that I heavily promote in the new sort of direction I'm taking. Mm. Another area of my business. So I'm looking at emotional skills training and I'm aiming it at men. Michael, so you are a prime candidate for this.
Yes.
So emotional skills training for men, that's the next thing. And I'm looking at using the cognitive behavioral ideas that I use with clients on day-to-day practice. Mm. And helping men to understand their emotions, helping them to work out when it's a good idea to be in that space, when it's not, what it means. I think also helping men to reawaken the emotions they had really as children and possibly even early teens. But by then, this whole thing about gender, males and females, were being shaped already to think certain ways and also to feel certain things. So I don't think men should be, you know, knocked in that respect for being reasonably logical and getting on with life and pushing feelings down and anything else that they might do. Mm. And not crying and anything else. Okay. Mm. Because in the same way that you've been perhaps pushed down that route of, you know, stuffing things down, women are told to let everything out. Mm. We're told to cry. We're told to be emotional. We're told to be that. And in fact, we are penalized if we don't.
Yeah.
So I will be called a hard-faced B-I, you know, and I won't spell it out for you, if I'm not being that way. Whereas if a man did exactly the same behavior, it would be actually okay. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
And vice versa, I suppose. If a man were, you know, being all emotional and having a good old cry in front of people every now and then and being a bit you know, amateur dramatics when they get on with it.
Yes.
That wouldn't be acceptable for you.
No. And, you know, it's a really fascinating time at the moment, because as we're recording this interview and having this discussion, obviously we know there is a huge amount of publicity and press about men and sexual harassment in the workplace.
Oh, yes.
And so there are a lot of men that need help because if they have these urges of doing that, for starters, then that's got to be a reason there behind it somewhere why they're behaving in that way. And although I have complete and total regard and respect for women, and I totally believe that men are completely in the wrong for doing anything that they might do and have done, and at the same time there's this feeling of embarrassment for my brothers as well. I'm embarrassed, you know, to be a man, because the danger is that all men are now, you know, labeled in some way,
absolutely,
and cannot be trusted.
And I think this is the problem, Michael. There's got to be a big reminder to women and men that anyone can commit a crime.
Mm.
Okay, certain crimes have almost become gender specific, haven't they? This is a male crime. This is a female crime. Yet, I think when it comes down to this whole area of sex and you know, abuse and everything else, of course, it's a big thing.
Mm.
But it has been skewed a lot to make men, and that and then becomes generalized as all men, are at fault.
Mm.
And that's where I think, for me, the course that I'm, you know, doing, designing, what I want to do really is to kind of redress the balance a bit.
Yeah.
It's not about giving men back their power, but in a way, it is giving men back their power. Because I think that all, you know, when I make this sweeping generalization, men, if someone said to me, Joy, all women are such crybabies, and all they want to do is, I'd say, hang on, I'm not one of those.
Mm.
Don't tar me with that brush, okay?
Mm. Mm.
Because sweeping generalizations are, as they say, it's one thing that happens or a couple of things that happen, and it's then designated to everything.
Mm.
So a couple of men doing X, Y, Z does not make it the whole population of men. And I believe that there are more good men out there than there are men who are coming up in the news for doing X, Y, Z. Okay, but just as there are some bad women, there are some bad men. I just think it needs to be rebalanced a little bit.
I know
that some women have got an axe to grind on this. They would dispute this. They would have an argument with me. I get it. And there is, we have got the women's, you know, feminist movement who have gone to an extreme in their own way. So that's got to be redressed.
Mm.
So it doesn't make any sense for me to have a partner, to have my son, have my dad, brothers, friends, you, Michael, you know, men around me who I really don't particularly think highly of, and who I don't actually trust. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
How am I going to have a decent relationship with someone that's male if I really believe that about men?
And I genuinely do not think that women are walking around like that, but it might be, men might be feeling that way. And it's about, you know, there's two sides to it. It's helping men actually address some of the issues that they are not dealing with, because some of those things can come out in the wrong way, that they, you know, are developing bad habits and behaviors. And so I think the work that you're doing is amazing, and that I think it's so brave of you to target one, you know, area. I'm sure you can help women as well equally with your coaching and CBT, and but the fact that you're saying, I know I want to, you know, look at that demographic of men that are struggling perhaps sometimes to express their feelings and don't know how to cope or deal with things. So yeah, I applaud you for doing that. So well done.
Well, thank you, Michael. I hope that it does reach the people that need it. But as you know, in life, I'm creating a service, and if I feel that the people who need it probably will not be attracted to it. I know I'm probably going to be talking to more moderate men who basically want to know more about their relationships, have better relationships with people, who possibly want to understand why they get angry so quickly, or who possibly want to understand why they get so anxious or depressed or stressed, just like, as you said, everything that I do can be applied to women. But I also, the reason why I've decided to work with men is that I do like working with men, full stop, in therapy. And I just think that there are so many services out there for women. I'm almost fed up with seeing very female biased groups, and very blatantly so. I mean, don't get me started, because we're talking about discrimination, we're talking about positive discrimination, negative discrimination, but women are allowed to say, this is a women only group, this is a blah 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 group, networking sessions, oh, it's for women. So yeah, the balance had to be redressed. Okay, perhaps we were missing out on things for various reasons. Perhaps men were in charge and you had hold of the reins. I get it. But so everything seems to be very, very female, female, female. But there's a point, I think, in certain societies especially Western society, where I think some of that can be, we can just be honest about that actually we're on reasonably a level playing field, even though I know there's been the whole argument about pay, you know, women getting less than men, even at high levels, professional levels. So that hasn't gone away. So there's lots of inequalities that need to be addressed. But I think it's used in a way to beat people on the head. So I think people are picking on one angle and just going, just driving that home and not looking at the rest of the picture. There's a bigger picture.
I think this could be a whole podcast interview on its own.
Don't get me going.
Okay, listen, I know we're running out of time and I've got a couple more questions left. And first question is, if there was one bit of advice that you would give aspiring business owners, what advice would that be?
Okay, well, I would encourage them to think wisely about what other skills they're willing to acquire, basically.
Yes.
So, you know, because it's one thing having a good idea, it's another being able to carry that out. And really, the way to go is to develop a team of people around you. So even though you're self-employed, you're a solo entrepreneur, all that kind of stuff, you do end up working with other people who do various bits for you. So I would encourage you to, you know, be happy with the fact you're going to have to learn lots of new skills.
Yes, I like that. Like that. Lots and lots of new skills.
Lots and lots and lots and lots of new skills. It never stops.
Brilliant, Joy. How could people get in touch with you? Where can they locate you on the internet?
Right, okay. Well, I'm in two places, I suppose. It's my therapy website, fair enough, catchathought.co.uk.
Of course.
But the main way of getting through to me, I think, on LinkedIn, if you go to LinkedIn and look at Joy Langley, probably Karen Joy Langley. Yep. I hope people can find me. But I'm on LinkedIn. And also my website is up. So I mentioned emotionalskillstrainingformen.com.
Yeah.
Big plug there, Michael. Sorry.
No, definitely. But
you know, it does what it says on the tin. Yep. It's teaching you emotional skills and it's for men. And I've got the number 4 and it says emotional skills training, the number 4, men.com. And then my email, which I'm sure you will put in some notes somewhere.
Well, I try not to put it in notes just because of spam catching.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, let me say it.
Yeah,
let me say it then. So it's joy@catchathought.co.uk. So that's CATCHATHOUGHT. It feels like a spelling exam. .co.uk.
You've passed. Yeah, correct.
A star.
You got 5 points in that round.
Thank you so much, Michael. I feel quite exhilarated after that.
Oh, fabulous, Joy. I really enjoyed listening to your story and what a fantastic journey you've been on and the job that you're doing today and the business that you're, you know, running for yourself and helping other people is just fabulous, amazing. I wish you fantastic success with it. And I know we've spoken before, but we haven't met in person. So I hope next time we will meet in person for a coffee.
Yeah, so I might bump into you in the middle of a grocery store buying your lemons and your oranges.
Yeah.
I really don't know, Michael.
No.
Anything is possible.
Anything's possible. All right, Joy. Take care and all the best.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Staying Alive UK. Share your story.